Once the order dug in for the expected attack, Kalin withdrew their forces to a more distant spot, rendering useless the order's effort at building defenses. If the order tried the same thing again, the Daharans continued to harry them day and night, buzzing around them like angry hornets, but staying out of reach of a heavy SWAT. If the Imperial Order tired of not being able to sink their teeth into their enemy and turned their forces to go after population centers, then Kalin had her men jump on their tails and put arrows in their backs as they struggled to get free. Eventually, they would have to forget their thoughts of plunder and turn back toward the threat. The Imperial Order was maddened by the Daharan's constant badgering tactics. Jagang's men were insulted by that kind of fighting. They believed real men met face-to-face in the field of battle and exchanged blow for blow. Of course, it didn't trouble their dignity that they greatly outnumbered the Daharans. Kalin knew such a meeting would be bloody, and only to the Order's advantage. She didn't care what they thought, only that they died. The more angry and frustrated the Imperial Order became, the more reckless they behaved, launching impetuous attacks into well-ordered defenses, or heedlessly pressing men into doomed attacks, trying to take ground they couldn't possibly take in such a fashion. It sometimes stunned Kalin to watch so many of the enemy march into range below their archers, fall dead, only to have yet more men march right in behind them, continuously adding corpses to a battlefield already choked with the dead and dying. It was insanity. The Daharans had suffered several thousand dead or seriously wounded. On the other hand, Kalin and General Myford estimated that they had killed or wounded in excess of 50,000 of the enemy. It was the equivalent of stepping on one ant as the colony poured out of its anthill. She could think of nothing else to do but to keep at it. They had no choice. Kalin, with Kar at her side, crossed a river of men to get to the command tents, sporting blue cloth strips. Unless you knew the day's color code, finding the command tents would be nearly impossible. Because of the fear of an infiltrator or an enemy gifted finding and being able to kill a group of senior officers gathered together, they met in nondescript tents. Colored cloth strips marked many of the tents. The men used them as a system of finding their units when they had to move on short notice, and so often. So Kalin got the idea of using the same system to identify the command tents. They changed the color code often, so no one color would become known as the officers' colors. Inside the cramped tent, General Myford looked up from where he bent over a table with a map unfurled at a cockeyed angle. Lieutenant Lydon of Kelton was there, along with Captain Abernathy, the commander of the Galleon forces Kalin had brought down with her weeks before. Addy was sitting quietly in the corner, as the representative of the gifted, watching the goings-on with her completely white eyes. Blinded as a young woman, Addy had learned to see using her gift. She was a remarkably talented sorceress. Addy was quite proficient at using that talent to do the enemy harm. Now she was there to help coordinate the sister's abilities with the needs of the army. When Kalin inquired, Addy told her, "Zed be down at the southern lines, checking on details." Kalin nodded her thanks. Warren went down there to help, too. Kalin scrunched up her freezing toes in her boots, trying to bring feeling back to them. She blew warm air into her cupped hands and then turned her attention to the waiting general. "We need to get together a good-sized force, maybe 20,000 men." General Myford sighed his frustration. "So they are moving an army up past us." "No," she said. "It's a trick." The three officers frowned their puzzlement as they waited for an explanation. "I ran into Jagang."
"You what?"
General Myford shouted in unbridled panic. Kalin waved a hand, allaying his fears. "Not like you're thinking. It was through the body of one of his slaves." She stuck her hands under her arms to warm them. "The important thing is that I played along with Jagang's scheme so that he would think we were falling for his plan." Kalin explained how Jagang's ruse of troop movements was meant to work, and how its true design was to draw away a good-sized force so as to leave those remaining behind weaker. The men listened as she laid it all out while pointing to the locations on the map.
If we were to send that many men out, Lieutenant Lydon asked, wouldn't that be just what Emperor Jagang wanted? It would be, she told him, but that's not what we're going to do. I want those men to ride out of camp, to make it look as if we were doing what he expected.
She leaned over the map, using a piece of charcoal to sketch in some of the nearby mountains she had just traveled through, and showed them a lowland pass around several. Captain Abernathy spoke up.
We have my Galleon troops. They're close to the number you need to serve as the decoy.
That's what I was thinking, General Myford said.
Done,
Kalin said. She pointed at the map again. Circle around these mountains here, Captain, so that when the Order attacks our camp, thinking to roll over us, your men can stick them in their soft side, right here, where they won't expect it. Captain Abernathy, a trim man with a graying, bushy mustache that matched his eyebrows, nodded as he watched Kalin pointing out the route on the map.
Don't worry, Mother Confessor. The Order will believe we're gone, but we'll be standing ready to drive right into their ribs when they come for you.
Kalin turned her attention back to the general. We'll also need to secretly trickle another force out of camp to wait at the opposite side of the valley from Captain Abernathy, so that when the Order comes up the valley in the middle, we can drive into their ribs from both sides at once. They won't want to let us cut off and trap part of their force, so they'll turn tail. Then our main force can drive steel into their vulnerable backs. The three officers considered her plan in silence, while outside the confusion of noise went on. Horses galloped past. Wagons creaked and bounced along. Snow underfoot crunched as soldiers shuffled past, and men called out orders. Lieutenant Lydon's eyes turned up toward Kalin.
Mother Confessor, my Keltons could be that other force. They've all served together a long time, and work well in our own units under my command. We could begin slipping out of camp at once, and gather down there to wait for the attack. You could send a sister with us to verify a prearranged signal, and then I could take my men in when Captain Abernathy attacks from the opposite side.
Kalin knew the man wanted to redeem himself in her eyes. He was also looking to establish for Kelton a measure of autonomy within the Daharan Empire.
That will be a dangerous spot, Lieutenant. If anything goes wrong, we can't come to your aid.
He nodded.
But my men are familiar with the area, and we're used to traversing mountainous country in the winter. The Imperial Order is from a warmer land. We have the advantage of weather and terrain. We can do the job, Mother Confessor.
Kalin straightened, letting out a breath as she appraised the man. General Myford, she knew, would like the idea. Captain Abernathy would, too. Galea and Kelton were traditional rivals, so the two would just as soon fight their own way and separately. Richard had brought the lands together so that they would all come to feel they were one now. That was vital if they were to survive. She supposed that they were fighting for the same goal, so in that way they were working together. They would have to coordinate their attacks. Lieutenant Lydon did make sense, too. His troops were mountain fighters.
All right, Lieutenant. Thank you, Mother Confessor.
Kalin thought to add some insurance.
If you acquit yourself well in this, Lieutenant, it could move you up in command.
Lieutenant Lydon clapped a fist to his hardened salute.
My men will make their queen proud.
Kalin acknowledged his pledge with a nod of the Mother Confessor. She addressed them all.
We had better get underway.
General Myford grunted his agreement.
This will be a good opportunity to knock down the numbers. If it goes even half right, this time we'll bleed them good.
He turned to the other two officers.
Let's get started. We need to have your men moving at once to give them enough time to be in position by morning. There's no telling how long they might wait to attack, but if it comes as soon as dawn, I want you in position and ready.
The order favors attacking at dawn, Captain Abernathy said. We can be on our way within the hour.
We'll be in place and ready by dawn should they come in early. As can we,
Lieutenant Lydon agreed. The two officers bowed and started to leave.
Captain,
Kalin called. The men turned back.
Mother Confessor, do you have any idea what could be keeping Prince Harold and the rest of your army? He should have been here long ago. We could really use the rest of your men.
Captain Abernathy's thumb twiddled a bone button on the front of his dark coat.
"I'm sorry, Mother Confessor. I, too, thought they should have been here by now. I can't imagine what could be keeping the prince."
"He should have been here by now," she repeated under her breath to herself. She looked up at the captain.
"Weather?"
"Perhaps, Mother Confessor.
If there are storms, that could have delayed him. That is probably the reason, and in that case I don't imagine he should be much longer. Our men train in the mountains in such conditions."
Kaelin sighed. "Let's hope he's here soon, then." Captain Abernathy confidently met her gaze.
"I know for a fact that the prince was eager to collect his men and get down here to help. Galia spans the Calisidran Valley. The prince personally told me that it was to our own best interest to halt the imperial order down here, rather than letting them advance further up into the Midlands, where our lands and our families would come under the terror of the enemy."
Kaelin could see in Lieutenant Lyden's eyes that he was thinking that if Prince Harold instead decided to make a stand in the Calisidran Valley in order to selfishly protect his homeland of Galia, such an obstacle very well could force the order to instead bear toward the northeast in their advance, and around the intervening mountains, and over into the Kern Plain, right toward Lyden's homeland of Kelton. If Lieutenant Lyden was imagining such treachery, he had the wisdom not to voice it.
"I know the weather was bad when I came down," Kaelin said. "It is winter, after all. I'm sure Prince Harold will soon be here to help his queen and the fellow people of the Dharan Empire."
Kaelin offered them a smile to soften the subtle threat.
"Thank you, gentlemen. You'd best get to your tasks. May the good spirits watch your backs."
After the men had saluted and hurried off to their work, Addie put her hands to her knees and levered herself to her feet.
"If you do not need me, I must see to informing the sisters, Zed and Warren, of our plans."
Kaelin nodded wearily. "Thank you, Addie." Addie, her eyes completely white, saw with the aid of her gift. Kaelin could feel that gifted gaze on her.
"You have used your power," the old sorceress said. "I be able to see it in your face. You must rest."
"I know," Kaelin said. "But there are things needing to be done."
"They will not get done if you fall ill, or worse, which could happen."
Addie's thin fingers gripped Kara's arm.
"See to it that the Mother Confessor be left alone for a while, so she can at least rest her head on the table, if nothing else."
Kara swung the folding chair around and set it behind the table. She pointed at it while leveling a stern look at Kaelin.
"Sit. I will stand watch."
Kaelin was exhausted. Using her confessor's ability sapped her strength. She needed time to recover. The hard ride back had only made matters worse. She went around the table and sat down heavily in the folding chair. She opened her fur mantle and set it back on her shoulders. Richard's sword was still strapped to her back, its hilt jutting up above her shoulder. She didn't bother to remove the sword. Addie, at seeing Kaelin comply without complaint, smiled to herself and went on her way. Kara took up guard at the entrance as Kaelin's head sank down into her pillowed arms. Trying not to let the terrible events of the day overwhelm her, she instead thought of Richard, remembering his handsome smile, his penetrating gray eyes, his gentle touch. Her own eyes closed. In her weariness, the chair and table felt as if they were spinning her around. In moments, though, as she held her thoughts of Richard in her mind's eye, she felt herself sliding into sleep. Chapter 36
Mother Confessor.
Kaelin squinted up at a dark shape above her. She blinked, clearing her vision, and saw that it was Verna. The gold sunburst ring of the prelate of the Sisters of the Light reflected a glimmer of lamplight. Behind her, twilight tinted the tent canvas with a rusty glow. Kaelin rubbed the sleep from her eyes. Verna wore a long gray wool dress and a dark brown cloak. At her throat, the dress had a bit of white lace that softened the austerity of the outfit. Verna's brown hair had a carefree wave and spring to it, but her brown eyes held a troubled look.
"What is it, Verna?"
If you have a moment, I would like to talk to you.
No doubt Verna had been talking to Warren. Whenever Kaelin saw them together, the shared intimate glances, the chance furtive touch reminded her of the way she and Richard felt about each other. It softened Kaelin's feelings about Verna's stern exterior to know she was in love, knowing, for that matter, that she was capable of tenderness. Kaelin knew that she, too, must be regarded with the same sort of curiosity, if not amazement, where tender feelings were concerned. She sighed, wondering if this was going to be a talk about Anne and prophecy. Kaelin wasn't in the mood.
"Kara, how long have I been asleep?"
"A couple of hours. It will soon be dark." As tight and sore as Kaelin's shoulders and neck were from sleeping with her head on the table, the lateness of the hour didn't come as a surprise. She stretched to the side and then saw Addie sitting on a short bench. She had a dark blanket over her lap.
"How do you feel?"
Addie asked.
"I'm fine."
Kaelin could see her breath in the frigid air.
"The men we sent out?" "Both groups be on their way more than an hour ago," Addie said. "The first group, the Galleans, all left together in big columns. The Keltons dribbled out in small groups, not as likely to be noticed by any spies watching."
Kaelin yawned. "Good." She knew they had to fear an attack by the Imperial Order as soon as morning. At least that should give their men enough time to travel to their positions and be ready. Waiting for an attack made her stomach feel queasy. She knew the men, too, would be on edge and likely to get little sleep. Addie idly ran a thin finger back and forth along the red and yellow beads at the neckline of her modest robes.
"I came back after the Galleans left to help Kara keep people away, so you would not be disturbed while you rested."
Kaelin nodded her thanks. Apparently either Addie thought Kaelin had rested enough, or she thought Verna's visit was important.
"What is it, then, Verna?"
"We have discovered something. Not so much discovered it as had an idea."
"Who is we?" Verna cleared her throat. Under her breath, she beseeched the Creator's forgiveness before she went on.
"Actually, Mother Confessor, I thought of it. Some of my sisters helped me with it, but I'm the one who thought it up. The blame falls to me."
Kaelin thought that was an odd way of putting it. She didn't think Verna looked at all pleased by her own idea, whatever it was. Kaelin waited silently for her to go on.
"Well, you see, we have a problem getting things past the enemy's gifted. They have sisters of the light, but also dark, and we don't have their power. When we try to send things..."
"Send things?"
Verna pursed her lips.
"Weapons."
When Kaelin's brow twitched with a questioning look, Verna bent and gathered something from the ground. She held out her open hand, showing Kaelin a collection of small pebbles.
"Zed showed us how to turn simple things into devastating weapons. We can use our power to fling them, or even with our breath blow on some small thing, like these pebbles, and use our magic to send them out faster than any arrow, even an arrow from a crossbow. The pebbles we flung out in this way cut down waves of advancing soldiers. The pebbles travel so swiftly that sometimes each would pierce the bodies of half a dozen men."
"I remember those reports," Kaelin said.
"But that stopped working because their gifted caught on to the artifice and now defend against such things."
Kaelin recognized the weary look of the weight of responsibility in Verna's brown eyes.
"That's right. The Order learned how to look for things of magic, or even things propelled by magic. Most of our conjuring that is in any way similar has become useless." "That's what Zed told me, that in war magic is most often unseen, that each side manages only to balance the other."
Verna nodded.
"It is so. We do the same against them. Things they used at first, we now know how to counter so we can protect our men. Our warning horns, for example. We learned that we must code them with a trace of magic to know they are genuine."
Kaelin drew her fur mantle up around her neck. She was chilled to the bone and couldn't seem to get warm. Not surprising, seeing as how she was spending all of her time outdoors.
It was insanity to be carrying on a war in such conditions.
She guessed that war in fine weather was no more sane. Still, she ached to be inside beside a cozy fire.
"So, what is this thing you thought up?"
As if reminded of the cold, Verna pulled her cloak tighter around her shoulders.
"Well, I got the notion that if the enemy gifted are, in a sense, filtering for anything magic, or even anything being propelled by magic, then what we need is something not magic."
Kaelin gave Verna a grim smile.
"We do. They're called soldiers."
Verna didn't smile.
"No, I meant something the gifted could do to disable enemy troops without risk to our own men."
Addie shuffled forward to stand behind Kaelin's left shoulder as Verna reached into her cloak and pulled out a small leather pouch closed with a drawstring. She tossed it on the table before Kaelin, then set a piece of paper beside it.
"Pour a little on the paper, please."
Verna was holding her stomach as if she were having indigestion.
"But be careful not to touch it with your finger or get it on your skin. And whatever you do, don't blow on it. Be careful not to even breathe on it."
Addie leaned in to watch as Kaelin carefully poured a small quantity of a sparkling dust from the pouch onto the square of paper. She pushed at the little pile with the corner of the pouch. There were hints of pallid colors, but it was mostly a pale, glimmering greenish-gray.
"What is it? Some kind of magic dust?"
"Glass."
Kaelin's eyes turned up.
"Glass? You thought up glass?"
Verna let out a tisk at herself for how foolish she must have sounded.
"No, Mother Confessor, I thought of breaking it. You see, this is just simple glass that has been broken and crushed into fine pieces, almost dust. But we used our Han to aid us when we crushed the glass with a mortar and pestle. By using our gift, we were able to break the glass into very tiny fragments, but in a special way."
Verna leaned over, her finger hovering above the little greenish-gray mound. Kara leaned in beside her in order to look down at the dangerous thing on the piece of paper.
"This glass, every piece, is sharp and jagged, even though each piece is very tiny. Each piece is hardly bigger than dust, so it weighs nothing, almost like dust."
"Dear spirits," Addie said before whispering a prayer in her own language. Kaelin cleared her throat.
"I don't understand. Mother Confessor, we can't get our magic past the defenses of the orders gifted. They are prepared for magic, even if it's a simple pebble, but uses magic to hurl it at their troops. This glass, however, even though we used magic to break it, has no magic properties, none at all. It's just inert material, the same as the dust kicked up by their feet. They can't detect it as magic, because it isn't magic. Through their gift, they will sense this as simple as dust, or mist, or possibly fog, depending on atmospheric conditions at the time."
"But we sent dust clouds at them before," Kaelin said.
"Dust to make them sick and such. They mostly counted it."
Verna held up a finger to note her point, as she smiled a grim smile.
"But those were dust clouds containing magic, Mother Confessor. This does not. Don't you see? It's so light it floats in the air for a long time. We could use simple magic to cast it up into the air, and then withdraw the magic. Or we could simply fling it up into the breeze, for that matter. Either way, we have only to let their troops run through it."
"All right." Kaelin scratched an eyebrow.
"But what will it do to them?" "It will get in their eyes," Addie said in her raspy voice from behind Kaelin's shoulder.
"That's right," Verna said.
"It gets in their eyes just as any dust would. At first it will feel like dust in their eyes, and they will try to blink it away. However, since the fragments are all still jagged and razor-sharp, they will instead embed themselves in the body's tissue. It will stick in their eyes and build up under their eyelids, where it will make thousands of tiny cuts across their eyes with each blink. The more they blink, the more it eats away at their delicate eyes."
Verna straightened and pulled her cloak together.
"It will blind them."
Kaelin sat in numb disbelief at the madness of it all.
"Are you sure?" Kara asked. "Might it just irritate them, like gritty dust?"
"We know for sure," Verna said. "We
had an accident, and know all too well what it does. It may do more damage when it gets in the throat, the lungs, and the gut. We don't know about that yet, but we do know for sure that such special glass, if we grind it to just the right size particles, will float in the air, and people passing through the cloud will be blinded in remarkably short order. As long as we can blind a man, he can't fight. It may not kill them, but as long as they are blind, they can't kill us, or fight back as we kill them.
Kara, usually gleeful at the prospect of killing the enemy, did not seem so now.
We would have but to line them up and butcher them.
Kaelin put her head in her hands, covering her eyes.
You want me to approve its use, don't you? That's why you're here.
Verna said nothing. Kaelin looked up at last.
That's what you want, isn't it? Mother Confessor, I need not tell you that the Sisters of the Light abhor harming people. However, this is a war for our very existence, for the very existence of free people. We know it must be done. If Richard were here, I just thought that you would want to be made aware of this and be the one to give such orders.
Kaelin stared at the woman, understanding then why she was holding her hand over a pain in her stomach.
Do you know, prelate, Kaelin said in a near whisper, that I killed a child today? Not by accident, but on purpose. I would do it again without hesitation, but that won't make me sleep any better. A child? It was truly necessary to kill a child? His name was Lyle. I believe you know him. He was another one of the victims of Anne's Sisters of the Light.
Verna, her face gone ashen, closed her eyes against the news.
I guess if I can kill a child, Kaelin said, I can easily enough give the orders for you to use your special glass against the monsters who would use a child as a weapon. I have sworn no mercy, and I meant it.
Addie laid a gnarled hand on Kaelin's shoulder.
Kaelin, Verna said in a gentle voice, I can understand how you feel. Anne used me, too, and I didn't understand why. I thought she used everyone for her own selfish purposes. For a time, I thought her a despicable person. You have every reason to believe as you do.
But I would be wrong, Verna? Is that what you were going to add? I'd not be so sure were I you. You didn't have to kill a little boy today.
Verna nodded in sympathy, but didn't argue.
Addie,
Kaelin asked, do you think there would be anything you might be able to do for the woman who was accidentally blinded? Perhaps you could help her. Addie nodded.
That'd be a good idea. Verna, take me to her and let me see what I can do.
Kaelin cocked her head as the two women moved toward the tent opening. Did you hear that?
The horn?
Verna asked. Yes, it sounds like alarm horns. Verna squinted in concentration. She turned her head to the side, listening attentively.
Yes, it does sound like alarm horns, she finally declared. But it doesn't have the right trace of magic through it. The enemy does that often, tries to get us to act based on false alarms. We have been having more and more lately.
Kaelin frowned.
We have? Why?
Why what?
Kaelin stood.
If we know they're false alarms and they don't work, then why would the order increase the attempts? That makes no sense.
Verna's gaze roved about as if searching in vain for an answer.
Well, I don't know. I can't imagine. I'm no expert in the tactics of warfare.
Kara turned to go have a look.
Maybe it's just some scouts coming back in.
Kaelin turned her head, listening. She heard horses running, but that wasn't so rare. It could be, as Kara suggested, scouts returning with reports. But by the sound of the hooves, the horses sounded big. She heard men yelling. The clash of steel rang out, along with cries of pain. Kaelin drew her Galilean royal sword as she started around the table. Before any of them could get more than a step, the tent shuddered violently as something crashed against its walls. For an instant, the whole thing tipped at an impossible angle. Then steel-tipped lances burst through the canvas. With a rush of wind, the tent collapsed around them. The heavy canvas drove Kaelin to the ground as it caved in. She couldn't get a grip on anything solid as the tent rolled her over and began dragging her along. Hooves thundered past, pounding the ground right beside her head. She could smell lamp oil as it sloshed across the canvas. With a whoosh, the oil in the tent ignited. Galen coughed on the smoke. She could hear the crackle of flames. She could see nothing. She was trapped, rolled up in the bucking tent as it slid across the ground. Chapter 37. Tightly shrouded in stiff canvas, Galen couldn't see anything. She choked and gagged on the thick, acrid smoke burning her lungs. She pulled frantically at the canvas, trying to disentangle herself, but as she bounced and tumbled along the ground, she couldn't make any headway gaining her liberty. The heat of flames close to her face ignited in her a sense of panic. Her weariness forgotten, she kicked and struggled madly as she gasped for air.
"Where are you?"
It was Kara's voice. It sounded close, as if she too was being dragged along and strenuously engaged in her own fight for life. Kara was smart enough not to shout Kalin's name or title when surrounded by the enemy. Hopefully, Verna knew better as well.
"Here!"
Galen shouted in answer to Kara. Kalin's sword was trapped, pressed to her legs by the rolled canvas. She managed to wriggle her left hand up onto the knife at her belt. She yanked it free. She had to turn her face to try to keep away from the heat of the oily flames. The smothering, smoky blindness was terrifying. With angry resolve, Galen stabbed at the canvas, punching her knife through. Just then, the tent hit something, and they were bounced into the air. The hard landing knocked the wind from her lungs. A gasp pulled in suffocating smoke. Again, Galen plunged her knife into the heavy canvas and slashed an opening as her entire shroud erupted into flame. She yelled again to Kara,
"I can't get—"
The tent hit something solid. Her shoulder whacked hard into what felt like a tree stump, and she was flipped up and over the top of it. Had she not been wearing her stiff leather armor, the blow surely would have broken her shoulder. Crashing down on the other side, Galen tumbled free and across the snow. She spread her arms to stop herself from rolling. Galen saw General Myford reach up and seize a fistful of chainmail and unhorse the man who had been dragging her tent. The man's eyes gleamed from behind long, curly, greasy hair. His stout body was covered with hides and furs over chainmail and leather armor. He was missing his upper teeth. As he lunged at the general, he lost his head, too. Yet more order troops wheeled their big war horses, striking down at the Daharan, scrambling both to escape the blows and to mount a defense. One of the war horses charged Kalin's way, its rider leaning out, swinging a flail. Kalin sheathed both her knife and sword. She snatched up the lance of the man who had been dragging the tent. She brought the long weapon up and spun around just in time to plant the butt end in a frozen rut and let the charging war horse take the steel-tipped point in his chest. As the grinning orders soldier with the flail leaped from the staggering horse, he drew his sword with his free hand. Galen didn't wait. As he was still alighting on his feet, she spun while drawing her own sword and landed a solid backhanded blow across the left side of his face. Without pause, she dove under the legs of another horse to dodge a blade when the horse's rider slashed down at her. She sprang up on the other side and hacked the rider's leg open to the bone twice before turning just in time to ram her sword up to its hilt into the chest of another horse sidling in, trying to crush her against the first. As the animal reared with a wild scream, Galen yanked her sword free and tumbled away just before the big horse crashed to the ground. The rider's leg was trapped, and he was at an awkward angle to defend himself. Galen made the best of the opportunity. For the moment, the immediate area was clear, enabling her to scramble over to the tent where the general was on his knees, yanking at the snarled mess of canvas and rope. More order cavalry were thundering past, threatening to trample Verna, Addie, and Kara still trapped in the tangle of tent. At least the burning section had pulled away. Galen worked beside General Myford to tug and cut the canvas. At last they ripped open the heavy material, freeing Addie and Verna. The two women were rolled up together, nearly in each other's arms. Addie's head was bleeding, but she pushed away Kalin's concerned hands. Verna emerged from the cocoon and stumbled to her feet, still dizzy from the wild ride. Galen helped Addie up. The scrape on her brow didn't look too serious. General Myford pulled frantically at the canvas. Kara was still inside, somewhere, but they no longer heard her. Galen seized Verna by the arm.
I thought they were false alarms.
They were, Verna insisted. Obviously they tricked us.
All around, soldiers were engaged in pitched battle with Imperial Order cavalry. Men shouted in fury as they threw themselves into battle. Some screamed as they were wounded or killed. Others called out orders, commanding a defense, while the men on horseback ordered in their attack. Some of the cavalry were setting fire to wagons, tents, and supplies. Others charged past, trampling men and tents. Pairs of riders teamed up to single out soldiers and take them down, then charged after another victim. They were using the same tactics the Daharans had used. They were doing what Kaelin had taught them to do. When a soldier, draped in filthy fur and weapons, cried out in bravado as he rushed at her, wielding a raised mace studded with glistening bloody spikes, Kaelin took off his hand with a lightning-swift blow. He staggered to a stop and stared at her in surprise. Without missing a beat, she drove his sword into his gut and gave it a wrenching twist before pulling it free. She turned her attention elsewhere as he crashed down atop a fire where his fur caught flame instantly. His screams melted in with all the others. Kaelin fell to her knees once more to help General Myford free Kara. He had found her amid the snare of rope and folds of canvas. From time to time, one of them had to turn to fight off sporadic attackers. Kaelin could see Kara's red boots sticking out from under the canvas, but they were still. Tent line was tangled around Kara's legs. With Kaelin and the general working together, they cut through the mire of rope and were finally able to unroll Kara. She held her head as she moaned. She wasn't unconscious, but she was groggy and unable to get her bearings. Kaelin found a lump in her hair at the right side of her head, but it wasn't bleeding. Kara tried to sit up. Kaelin pressed her down on her back.
"Stay there. You were hit on the head. I don't want you to get up just yet."
Kaelin looked over her shoulder and saw Verna nearby, singling out Imperial Order troops, each twitch of her hands casting a fiery spell to blast them from their horses, or a focused edge of air as sharp as any blade, yet more swift and sure, to slice them down. Without the gift themselves, or one of the gifted to protect them, the enemy's simple armor was no defense. Kaelin caught Verna's attention and motioned for her help. Seizing the woman's cloak at her shoulder, Kaelin pulled Verna close to speak into her ear so as to be heard above the noise of battle.
"See how she is, will you? Help her."
Verna nodded, and then huddled at Kara's side as Kaelin and the general turned to a fresh charge of cavalry. As one man galloped in close, wielding his lance around, General Myford dodged the strike and then leaped up onto the side of the horse, catching hold of the saddle's horn. With a grunt of angry effort, he drove his sword through the rider. The surprised man clawed at the blade in his soft middle. The general yanked his sword free, then grabbed the man by the hair and dragged him out of the saddle. As the dying man fell away, General Myford sprang up into the saddle in his place. Kaelin snatched up the fallen cavalryman's lance. The big Daharan general wheeled the huge horse into the way of charging enemy cavalry, protecting Verna and Kara. Kaelin sheathed her sword and used the lance to good effect against the warhorses. Horses, even well-trained warhorses, didn't appreciate being stabbed in the chest. Many people considered them just dumb beasts. But horses were smart enough to understand that driving themselves onto a pointed lance was not what they wanted to do, and reacted accordingly. As horses bucked and reared when Kaelin stabbed them with her lance, many of their riders fell. Some were injured from the fall onto scattered equipment or the frozen ground, but most came under the swarming attack of the Daharans. From atop his Imperial Order warhorse, General Myford commanded his men to form a defensive line. After directing them into place, he charged off, roaring a string of orders as he went. He didn't tell his men who to protect, so as not to betray Kaelin to the enemy, but they quickly saw what it was he intended them to do. The Harans grabbed up the enemy lances or came running with their own pikes, and soon there was a bristling line of steel-tipped pole weapons presenting a deadly obstacle to any approaching cavalry. Kaelin called out orders to men on either side, and as she joined the line, commanded them into position to block an Imperial Order cavalry unit of about 200 who were trying to make good their escape. The enemy may have been emulating the raids the Daharan cavalry had made on the Imperial Order's camp, but Kaelin wasn't about to allow them to succeed at it. She intended them to fail. The enemy's horses balked when they encountered a solid line of advancing pikes brandished by men shouting battle cries. Soldiers coming from behind the Order cavalry rained down arrows. The Harrans dragged trapped riders from their saddles down into the bloody hand-to-hand fighting on the ground.
"I don't want one of them escaping camp alive!"
she yelled to her men.
"No mercy! No mercy!"
every Daharan within earshot called out in answer. The enemy, so confident and arrogant as they had charged in, relishing the prospect of spilling Daharan blood, were now nothing more than pathetic men in the ungainly grip of despair as the Daharans hacked them to death. Kaelin left the soldiers with the lances and pikes, now that a defensive line had been established and the enemy was trapped, and ran back through the fires and choking smoke to find Verna, Addie, and Kara. She had to dodge wounded soldiers of both armies on the ground. The fallen attackers, who still had fight in them, snatched at her ankles. She had to stab several who tried to rise up to grab her. Others afoot who suddenly appeared she had to cut down. The enemy knew who she was, or at least they were pretty sure. Chigang had seen her, and no doubt had described the mother confessor to his men. Kaelin was sure to have a heavy price on her head. There seemed to be Imperial Order men scattered throughout the camp. She doubted there had been an attack by foot soldiers. They were probably cavalrymen who had lost their mounts. Horses were often easier moving targets to hit with arrows and spears than were men. In the gathering darkness, it was hard to make out enemy soldiers. They were able to sneak through the camp undiscovered as they hunted targets of value, such as officers or maybe even the mother confessor. When the lurking enemy spotted Kaelin making her way through the chaos, they came out from their hiding places to go after her with wild abandon. Others she came upon and surprised. Remembering not only her father's training but Richard's admonition, Kaelin cut fiercely into the enemy soldiers. She gave them no opening, no chance, no mercy. Her training under her father had been a good foundation for the esoteric tactical precepts that Richard had taught her when she was recovering from her wounds back in Heartland. Richard's way had seemed so strange then. Now it seemed so natural. In much the same way a lighter horse could outmaneuver a big warhorse, her lighter weight became her edge. She didn't need the weight because she simply didn't clash with the enemy in the traditional manner as they expected. She was a hummingbird floating out of their reach, swooping in between their ponderous moves to efficiently deliver death. Such moves were not at odds with the manner of fighting that her father had taught, but complimented it in a way that fit her. Richard had trained her, not with a sword, but with a willow switch, a mischievous smile, and a dangerous glint in his eyes. Now Richard's sword, strapped over the back of her shoulder, was an ever-present reminder of those playful lessons that had been not only unrelenting, but deadly serious. She finally found Verna, bent over Kara, but didn't see the general anywhere. Kaelin snatched Verna's sleeve. "How is she?" "She threw up. But that seemed to have helped once it passed. She will probably be woozy for a while, but I think she's otherwise all right." "She has a thick skull," Addie said. "It not be cracked, but she should lie still for a time, at least until she recovers her balance." Kara's hands groped as if having trouble finding the ground beneath her. Despite her obvious dizziness, she was cursing the prelate and trying to sit up. Kaelin, squatting beside Kara, pressed her shoulder to the ground. "Kara, I'm right here. I'm fine. Lie still for a few minutes." "I want at them." "Later," Kaelin said. "Don't worry. You'll get your chance." She saw that the blood was clean from Addie's head. "Addie, how are you? How is your head?" The old sorceress gestured dismissively.
"Bah, I be fine. My head be thicker than Kara's."
Soldiers had gathered, forming a protective wall of steel. Verna, Addie, and Kaelin crouched over Kara, keeping an eye on the surrounding area. But the fighting immediately around them seemed to have ended, even if pockets of battle remained. With a large number of Daharan soldiers who had protectively closed ranks, the four women were safe for the time being. General Myford finally returned, charging through the line of Daharan defenders as they parted for him. He leaped from his enemy warhorse. The horse tossed his head at the indignity of being ridden by the enemy and ran off. The young Daharan general crouched down on the opposite side of Kara. Winded, he started talking anyway.
"I've been down, checking with the front lines. This is a raid, much like what we've been doing to them. It looked bigger than it really was. When they spotted the mother confessor, They called their men into this area, so the damage was mostly focused in this section.
Why didn't we know? Kalin asked. What went wrong with the alarm?
Not sure. He was shaking his head, still getting his breath.
Zed thinks that they learned our codes, and that when we blew the alarm, they must have used subtractive magic to alter the magic woven into the sound that tells our gifted that it's a real attack.
Kalin let out an angry breath. It was all starting to make sense to her. That's why there have been so many false alarms. They were numbing us to them, so that when they attacked, we would be unconcerned, falsely believing our own alarms were just another enemy false alarm.
I'm guessing you're right.
He flexed his fist in frustration. He looked down then and noticed Kara scowling up at him.
Kara, are you all right? I was so... I mean, we thought you might be badly hurt.
This is the end of this cassette. This program is continued on side one of cassette number 11.